Hey everyone, this is just the usual COVID reminder that we are recording remotely due to social distancing, so the sound is slightly subpar, hopefully not too bad. Welcome to Feminists Without Mystique, a podcast where we process politics, sex, and the unrelenting fire hose of bullshit in the news through an unapologetically feminist lens. Today, we have a bonus episode of Just We See You content regarding Woo-hoo. COVID. Woohoo!
Party.
Because there's been so much bullshit that we kind of felt like... We're really hoping that our next episode, the goal is to make it a positive, uplifting one, but we couldn't let all this bullshit COVID stuff slide or wait another week for it. So we wanted to kind of just send everyone a fun, sunshine-filled bonus episode of We See You's.
Indeedy. And like, we're not trying to cause fear or panic. We just, it's important to hold those in charge accountable in times like these, you know, and we'll end on a positive note. So
yes.
We now begin. Bonus, we see you. Okay. NBC News reporter Peter Alexander cited the latest pandemic statistics showing thousands of Americans are now infected and millions are worried. He asked President Trump, "What do you say to Americans who are scared?" Trump was visibly pissed and responded with, "I say that you're a terrible reporter. That's what I say." Trump said Alexander asked a nasty question and that you're doing sensationalism, and the same thing with NBC and Comcast. I don't call it Comcast. I call it Concast. Let me just tell you something. That's really bad reporting, and you ought to get back to reporting instead of sensationalism. Okay, calm down. He doubled down when Caitlin Collins, a CNN White House correspondent, reasonably asked, "Do you think going off on Peter, going off on a network is appropriate when the country is going through something like this?" And Trump went on to say, "Alexander's not a good journalist and that coming together is much harder when we have dishonest journalists." Okay, so first of all, he didn't say anything dishonest, the journalist, at all. In fact, like the numbers that we have now are probably lower than what they actually are. And then Alexander gave Trump a pretty perfect opportunity to appear presidential and assuage the fears of the public. Like, it was not a hardball question in the slightest. But of course, there's nothing presidential about Donald Trump, and fear-mongering is more his thing than providing comfort. Trump's continued attacks on journalists are another troubling reminder of his authoritarian media squashing habits and his inability to focus on the task at hand because he needs to assert his weird brand of alpha male. We see you.
Ugh, we see you.
Gross.
Yeah. That clip was insane.
Yeah. Like, you are a weird, you're a baby. What are you doing? Stop screaming.
Stop screaming. You're supposed to be the leader of this country. Jesus. Ugh. Well, Senator Richard Burr.
Oh my God.
In a display of breathtaking corruption, Senator Burr dumped up to $1.7 million of stock after reassuring the public about coronavirus preparedness. So, Intelligence Chair Richard Burr's sell-off came at the same time that he was receiving daily briefings on the coronavirus health threat. Burr is chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee, and as chairman, he has access to the most highly classified information about threats to America's security. He offered public assurances that the government was prepared for the coronavirus threat and then turned around and sold off a significant percentage of his stocks, unloading between $628,000 and $1.72 million of his holdings on February 13th. In 33 separate transactions. We know this not only because there are the records of those 33 separate stock transactions on February 13th, but also because NPR obtained a secret recording from February 27th in which the lawmaker gave a group of VIP exclusive people a much more dire preview of the economic impact of coronavirus than what he had already told the public. We know that he made this huge stock dump days before he authored a Fox News op-ed claiming that, quote, the United States was better prepared than ever to face the emerging public health crisis. It's infuriating because when he was public facing, he lied, assuring the American public things were under control. But privately, we know that he was covering his ass financially. His committee was receiving daily coronavirus briefings and people were looking to him for a sense of how to prepare. When you conduct personal finance business on private information, it is insider trading and it's a serious ethical breach and it's very much against the law. His behavior was even more repulsive, seeing as he's profiting off of information on an incoming unprecedented global pandemic for which the US government and its citizens are uniquely unprepared. One need only look at the side-by-side graphic comparing how the U.S. responded to COVID and how South Korea responded. We both had the same confirmed positive case on the same day, January 20th. South Korea then mobilized a nationwide effort, tested over 300,000 people, while the U.S. flailed, with Trump and the government saying it wasn't a real threat and it was contained and it would go away. There was very little testing, botched test kits, and insurance and healthcare restrictions on people who could get tested and when, and we're still burdened by all of this. So at this point, according to public health professionals, testing is actually futile. We're much past that. And we now have to focus on responding to this as a pandemic, putting resources towards the very strained healthcare system in research, treatment, and infection control. But back to Burr, as we know, a week after Burr's sales, the stock market began to take a sharp decline and lost about 30% since. We are in the worst economic decline so far since the Great Depression. It's happening quickly. This financial quarter is projected to be the worst in terms of financial losses since we began keeping track of this in the 40s. Andrew Yang tweeted about Burr, quote, "If you find out about a nation-threatening pandemic and your first move is to adjust your stock portfolio, you probably should not be in a job that serves the public interest," which I think sums things up pretty well. But even Tucker Carlson called for Burr's resignation, saying, quote, "Now, maybe there's an honest..." Yeah, I know. He said, "Now, maybe there's an honest explanation for what he did. If there is, then he should share it with the rest of us immediately. Otherwise, he must resign from the Senate and face prosecution for insider trading." That was Tucker Carlson.
Whoa.
Yeah. It's also worth noting that Representative Chris Collins of New York and Martha Stewart went to prison for doing the exact same thing, only they actually weren't profiting off of a global pandemic. So Burr is looking worse and worse. Now, Burr is not the only one who sold stocks during this time. The new Republican Senator Kelly Loeffler, whose husband is the chairman of the New York Stock Exchange, also sold significant amounts of stock in this time. Records show that Loeffler began selling off stocks on January 24th, the same day she attended a Senate Health Committee hearing on the coronavirus. She also, get this, started buying stocks in a teleworking company. So, and neither Loeffler nor Burr's stocks are held in a blind trust. So, just further indication of... they know what's going on with their stocks, even though they hold these positions of power. And in their defense, they've said things like, "We didn't know they operate without us," which that's not really believable or true, considering the facts that we have at hand. I know we're busy mounting a full-scale response to this COVID crisis, as we should, but I want ethics investigations on these senators now. We need to get these people out of office and give the voters of North Carolina and Georgia a chance to vote on new senators to represent their interests. Fuck these crooked assholes. We see you.
Ugh, we see you. Such sketchery.
Yeah.
All right. Arizona Republican Congressman and douchebag Andy Biggs said during a Monday radio interview that he voted against the Families First Coronavirus Response Act because it included provisions for domestic partnerships, including same-sex relationships. Andrew and his wife, Biggs, have been linked with the... so funny. Have been linked with the United Families International, a conservative Christian group with a firm stance against same-sex marriage. Representative Biggs was their policy advisor and Cindy was the secretary and treasurer. So this is nothing new for them. Biggs was one of 40 Republicans who voted against the FFCRA, although legislation still passed in the House of Reps. voting against a response bill that would provide aid to your constituents during a fucking pandemic because you don't want gay couples to, what, live, receive help, and their exclusion is more important than the inclusion of others. As I've admitted before, I don't know Jesus personally, but this does not seem to really vibe with his message. I'm glad the bill passed the House despite people like Biggs, but we see you to Biggs and the others who voted against providing funding in a pandemic because the bill didn't jive with their homophobia.
We see you. It's ridiculous. Ugh. Okay. 0 hour contracts. Up next on the We See You docket. But
up next.
Up next. But to back up, as of Thursday, the Department of Labor is showing that there have been 281,000 unemployment claims and an increase of 70,000 compared to last week. 281,000 unemployment claims this week, which is up. It's an increase of 70,000 compared to last week. And this is only the beginning. These are early numbers. The Trump administration is asking states not to provide precise unemployment numbers right now, which is pretty telling. As usual, we get transparency from the government only through kicking, screaming, and rigorous reporting from places like the Washington Post, New York Times, and ProPublica. Amidst all of this, there's widespread confusion from employees who are on what's called zero-hour contracts. Many are understandably confused because if you're on a zero-hour contract, that means you're technically still employed and your job is able to retain you despite working 0 hours and thus making $0. And in some instances, health insurance is withdrawn when you have a 0 hour contract and you're working 0 hours, but you can't collect unemployment, or so people think. So according to experts at the Wall Street Journal, Yahoo Business, and Business Insider, to name a few, if your hours have been cut down to zero on these 0 hour schedule contracts, even if you've been told by your employer that you can't collect unemployment, you can and should apply for unemployment benefits. According to a lot of experts, the only requirement for unemployment benefits is that a worker has zero earnings in the prior week and the employer didn't offer any hours. According to Andrew Stetter, a senior fellow at the Century Foundation, he said to Yahoo Business, quote, "The question isn't whether you're employed, it's whether you're working," which is interesting / confusing. And it's understandable that people in both employees and then like corporate HR are confused. It is, however, like corporate HR's job to figure out what can be covered and what can't. And I don't understand why they would purposely mislead employees. So that's kind of a whole other thing, but let's try to fight this information. If you can claim unemployment, you should. And once this is all over, let's tackle this bizarre concept of a 0 hour contract. Why does this exist? If any of our listeners know a reason why these contracts exist in a way that is supposed to actually benefit the workers at companies, please let me know, because I certainly have not been able to find any. It seems like it's this legal loophole for companies to weasel out of paying workers while still saying that they are employees and they have an employment level that is higher. So, and this is at places like Marriott and American Eagle. So 0 hour contracts are super sketchy. I think we should definitely do away with them after this, but I'm open to hearing if there's some reason why they're good. It just seems like they're really fucking bad. We see you.
Yes. All right. Trump continues to lie about all kinds of things related to COVID-19. On Wednesday, he announced that within the next week, the Navy would dispatch its two hospital ships, the USNS Comfort and the USNS Mercy, to help treat patients. He said the ships are both in tip-top shape. The Navy said that actually the USNS Comfort was undergoing renovations and it was getting fixed, and it would be at least several weeks before it could even set sail. And then on Thursday, Trump said the FDA had approved use of an anti-malaria drug called chloroquine to treat patients with coronavirus. He said that we're going to be able to make the drug available almost immediately. He said it was a tremendous breakthrough and a game changer. But FDA Commissioner Stephen Hahn said that actually a large pragmatic clinical trial would be needed first before making it available to patients, and said that he couldn't even begin to speculate about a timeline for the drug's availability. So probably not almost immediately then. In another press conference on Friday, Trump again talked about how about the drug in the same terms. And this time, Dr. Anthony Fauci, who we know as the sane professional and one of the top experts of the White House response team, he then publicly explained the need for clinical proof. Trump also said another drug, remdesivir, had also been approved or very close to approved by the FDA for treating patients with coronavirus. However, that drug is currently undergoing a clinical trial and is at least months away from being ready for public use. We already know that Trump has a tendency to be free and loose with the facts. And when we're in the midst of a pandemic, it's as obvious as ever. People rely on their government leaders for information and direction during a crisis. With Trump overpromising on things like medication and additional help via the ships, he's setting people up for more disappointment and panic when these things don't come to fruition or don't do so on the timeline he's promised. We need to continue to gather information from the experts and take everything Trump says with a massive grain of salt. With literally, I don't know, all the salt in the Dead Sea. We see you, Trump.
We see you. All the salt in the Dead Sea.
Dead Sea jokes.
Ugh, okay. It is a truth universally acknowledged that the health and safety of those incarcerated in U.S. prison populations are rarely considered, let alone seriously prioritized. According to the Marshall Project, the percentage of people in state prisons who are 55 and older more than tripled between 2000 and 2016. For the first time, the aging population in state prisons has surpassed the number of young adults between the ages of 18 and 24. The volume of older prison populations is most likely correlated to the icky, overzealous, racist, tough on crime sentencing laws of the 1980s and 90s. There is a concern that prison guards and others working at the facility at these prison facilities will bring coronavirus in, and once it begins to spread, it could have devastating effects on the prison population, already vulnerable and without much agency in accessing basic health care. I shudder to think how bad the virus would have to get for people to even get a test. And then to be quarantined and tended to in a time where healthcare workers are already about to be forced to prioritize patient care and resources in a really scary way. It's a really scary thought. The Florida Department of Corrections, for instance, says that they are, quote, fully prepared to handle any potential COVID cases. And I seriously doubt that. As the Marshall Project points out, in addition to hygiene issues and overcrowding, the prison population isn't exactly, or prison, the incarcerated, the management at prisons isn't exactly known for taking prophylactic health measures and has been criticized for not taking chronic health illnesses in their aging population seriously. And all this in Florida, where Governor DeSantis has been way behind the curve in encouraging social distancing. He still hasn't closed the Florida beaches to the droves of spring breakers. I seriously doubt the Florida Department of Corrections or really any facility will be ready for this and respond with the appropriate level of alarm once cases are detected, and they have begun. I think New York was the first state where they were detected. One good thing coming out of this is that New York, Ohio, and California are moving to release many of their most vulnerable population. So that is good. Judges are holding emergency hearings to work out plea deals and other agreements to allow prisoners to be released early or without serving time. So this is most definitely a good thing. It's too bad that it took a pandemic, but here's hoping that once the pandemic is under control, we can take a look at the aging population of those incarcerated and think about putting in place a plan for their release, especially those with chronic health conditions that cost the state system billions anyway. Just let them live the rest of their lives with family. This is a bit of a long and meandering we see you, but wrapped with a silver lining. We should continue to bring up just shining a light on the most vulnerable populations and make sure that they're given the human rights abuses, that they're given the human rights that they deserve, given that the abuses very frequently happen over in incarcerated populations. And to the Florida Department of Corrections that says that we are fully prepared to handle any potential COVID cases, I am the teacher that is coming by to say, why don't you double check that answer and show your work? Prisons dealing with COVID prep, do it better, do it now. We see you.
Yes.
um, So right. Yeah. Just because, like, there are too many we see yous happening so quickly. I mean, even, like, as I was preparing, there was also, like, the totally frustrating news that, like, the Norwegian cruise ship companies are lying to their potential, to people who are calling that are, like, optimistically wanting to book a cruise. And they have, the management is sending these responses to their sales team and pressuring their sales team, who operate on commission anyway. So, like, that's already fucking stressful. To be like, just say that, like, it's a warmer climate, in a warmer climate, coronavirus doesn't survive. And that's what experts are saying. It's like, oh my God. So
that's awful. That's evil.
Yeah. So, you know, evil just sort of like springing up in all these different places.
Yeah. It's no good. It's no good. But we've also, you know, we were talking about how we both seen like people being good.
Yeah.
And helping out in their communities, and, you know, if people have extra, and a lot of people are tight right now, but if you have extra funds, donate to local food banks, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. You know, if we can all take care of our local communities, we can get through this together.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah.
And then we were going to talk about some, like, good things that are happening in our lives despite or even because of coronavirus.
Yes.
I know I think we've both probably been doing this, but I've been FaceTiming a lot with friends and family, and it's been really nice. Like, I'm able to talk to so many more people, like, in depth every week than I have been able to in the past, and, like, that's really nice. It's nice to be able to see their faces, and seems like we'll have a while that we'll be able to keep doing this. So even though it's social isolation, it's like we can connect more socially in certain ways. So that's nice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, there are nice things happening. And it is nice to see different artists doing nice things. So, like, we thought we would end with a couple of just, like, good things from both of us. This came, like, right at the moment that I needed it this week, which was, I think it was the first day that for me, like, I couldn't go to, like, I talked about in the last episode, Orange Theory, and I was trying to do their online, their workout that they posted for the day, and I was just kind of struggling with the motivation and not wanting to be too loud with downstairs neighbors and just feeling like this is not the space in which I thrive with exercise, like, being by myself and accountable to no one and not using the proper equipment. Anyway, I was feeling pretty down about that. And I was also, like, trying to take a quick break from work, which was really stressful. And through all that, I just glanced at my phone, and Jennifer Ely, the British actress, she plays Elizabeth Bennet. This is, like, for anyone who is a Jane Austen fan, but also everyone else. But it's just, this, like, hit exactly what I needed this week. Jennifer Ely was reading from Pride and Prejudice, and she plays Elizabeth Bennet in the 1996, like, beloved BBC version. And she just has the most calming voice and presence. And she just read, like, the first two chapters on her Instagram Live. And she's been doing that now for the rest of the week. I think she's on chapter 7 or 8. It's just it was just, like, the soothing balm that I needed. And I kind of, like, I just really appreciate different people. It doesn't really matter, like, wherever you are, whatever fan universe you're in, to be able to try to find just, like, little, like, the different actors that you follow or the fan communities, and just check up and see if there's anything that has been posted that's just, like, a little nugget for you, for your group, because it seems like there's lots of different communities that you can find that in.
Yeah, for sure. I know a lot of musicians are, like, live streaming too, and Lizzo did this, like, live meditation. Just delightful. Another thing that I'm kind of appreciating and enjoying is just, like, having time to do things. You know, like, I'm doing yoga every day. Have I mentioned that? But it has been really, really nice. Like, I remember why I loved doing it so much, like, 10 years ago. And I've been getting shit around the house done that I've just been putting off, like, went through all my clothes, and then you know, it's like, obviously I'm not going to go drop it off somewhere, but ThredUp is this like online thrift store where you can sell your stuff to, and you don't like lick the thing closed or anything. They've got to, you know, seal it. So you just send it to them and then you get a little bit of money for your clothes, mm-hmm. Which is nice. I've been working on my Spanish, and I was telling you earlier, I'm going to kind of plan a trip to Spain for when this is all over.
Yeah.
So just like, you know, doing things. I've got some books I'm going to dip into theoretically.
Yeah.
But yeah, just all the things we said, like, I don't have time for that.
Yeah. It's so important. It's, well, maybe we can go to Spain at the same time.
Yes.
If I have to reschedule my Spain trip, which I'm really hoping I don't. But yeah, and the other thing that I've been really like thinking about is there was this letter that was sent out. Jenna Wortham, who's this writer that I really like, she has this listserv called Fermentation and Formation. She doesn't send out like notes very often, so whenever she does, it's just like a really, it's just like a gift for my day, because it always is speaking to something that I need to hear. She spoke about how there's, she said in her letter from this week, quote, "There's such a strong desire already to contextualize this moment, to lay so much importance to the veils that are dropping, the realities coming into focus as other illusions thin. It's all still evolving so rapidly, and we're really just at the beginning of whatever is to come. I hope as much as anyone that new systems of existence are coming into the forefront, that old ways are being revived, and perhaps something new is birthing, transforming. We've seen so much of it already, and it's incredible. And yet one truth is the meanings will continue to come. This moment will likely last longer than we can grasp right now. It will stand out for decades, for generations to come. Another truth is that we didn't need a virus or pandemic to show us how to keep each other safe, to care for the earth, to put the collective first. It's important to remember that too. Right now, it's okay to grieve, to feel fear, to need whatever it is that you need. Be present with what you can work with, the anxiety and your own reactions to this newly forming reality."
I love that.
Yeah.
That's so deep. I feel like we should end there, but I do have one more.
Yes.
So why don't we go from depth to like changing your look? You know what I mean? So now's as good a time as ever. I've been like, so I was originally supposed to get married in July. I don't know if that's happening or not, but either way, I was,
by the way, wild statement, you know?
I know, right? Like, what are these times? IDK, LOL. But I had been toying, I have blonde hair, and I toyed with the idea of like adding some pink in. I was like, I'm not going to do it right before a wedding. But I found this like more temporary, like washes out within like 4 weeks kind of vibe. So I figure, what am I doing for the next 4 weeks? So ordered it up. It was like $15 or something, and well reviewed. So we'll see. You know,
good.
So yeah. Cut your bangs, dye your hair, live your lives.
Yeah. I mean, there's a certain freedom. That's funny. Cause yeah, as we were talking about before, I'm seriously contemplating cutting my bangs myself, which is terrifying. This is easily something that I could fuck up, but they're driving me crazy, and I'm not really going to see any human beings for the next 4 weeks, probably. And if I do, they'll just laugh at me, but it's not like it's important. So there's a certain liberation to getting the pink hair, cutting your bangs, trying something new that you can, like, something new that you can do. And there was some person, like, flippantly on Twitter made the point, but I think it's a good point for perspective. Like, I think one interesting thing is that we are able to, like, there's so many daily inconveniences and frustrations that happen that any number of which can throw us into like existential panic and fear. But that
for sure.
But that, like, there's the fact that it's a global pandemic and there are so many other bigger things to worry about in it. It's easier to put the woes that we're all personally feeling in perspective quicker, because as you start to feel your own pain, thinking about the pain of others, it's just always right there at the forefront too. And someone on Twitter said, like, also, you know, our grandparents, great grandparents were, you know, fighting in the trenches and dealing with like air bombings and like a lot more. And what we're being asked to do is stay in our apartments and sit on the couch. And I think we can weather this storm.
Yeah. I think we can do it.
Yeah. Well, thanks everyone for tuning into our, is there any other last little nugget?
That's it. My kitty just came up here. If anyone hears any meows or anything in the background.
Oh, which one?
Bubbles.
Bubbles the potato.
Yeah, she's my thick girl. She got spots. It's great. Little bubbles.
Well, we hope everyone is having a restful weekend. Deep breaths. And we'll talk to you with something a little bit more positive on Tuesday.
That's right. Goodbye, everyone.
Bye.